This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm Aaron Bentley. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
Hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. I'm doing pretty well. You know, we were talking a little bit in our pre-pro about how it seems like everything, like we're at the end of the month. But it does seem like August, because of all like everything going on in the world, it does seem like August is like this crushing mass of people attempting normalcy, but there is no normalcy. And that's like a huge like existential thing that's been bouncing off and on in my head over the last few days. So, you know, other than that, I exist as much as I did last week. Take it as you will. How are you doing, Big Cat?
Doing all right. Trying to move. A lot of stuff going on at work. It sucks. So I was really looking forward to this Dynamite episode last night, and it did not deliver, which we'll get into. We're also joined, of course, by Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
Hello, it's me. I'm here on the podcast, everyone. This is the podcast where we discuss AEW. Hey, wanted to check in. Is SB still enjoying some Animal Crossing time?
SB is an Animal Crossing fiend. She plays probably daily.
Okay. Good. I'm glad to hear it. They just put out a new update. Last night, of course, we recorded this on Thursdays. So you may be listening to this on Friday, in which case the update came out 2 days ago. But it does have the new Dream Suite Island Visitation System, which means that you can visit people's islands without them being online at the exact same time. So, you know, hopefully we can get that sorted.
I got the sense that people have kind of gotten off of the Animal Crossing bandwagon. I don't really see any tweets about it, and I don't hear you all talking about it in the chat. So
yeah, well, you know, it's a pretty this is going to be controversial. I'm going to get some haters. It's a pretty shallow game beyond sort of configuring the aesthetics of the island to be what you want it to look like. Like, you know, other than that, it's just sort of okay, go collect bugs and shells and things like this. So, you know, you kind of have to make your own fun out of it. But
yeah,
you know, I still put a good, I don't know, 50 plus hours in it before I was like, okay, I've had probably my fill for the time being.
No, that's kind of how I'm like, it's something that there is like the plateau you hit that you, after you've done everything and you've pretty much just are now just maintaining. And when you hit like that level, I don't know, at least for me personally, there hasn't been as much stuff in the game month to month and day to day to really like keep me at it. So I'm off that. I've been playing since I switched over to a PC. I got that $1 Xbox Game Pass, and that let me play the 2014 game Sunset Overdrive, the only like Xbox One exclusive I was halfway interested in. So I've been doing that as of late. So that's been where my gaming attention has been. I'm a big sucker for like games that remind me somewhat of Jet Set Radio and let you like grind stuff. So
it's now, did you see there's a spiritual successor to Jet Set Radio that was just announced?
Yeah, I saw that. I'm stoked. That's like right up my alley. I mean, I remember when I had my Dreamcast, and Jet Set Radio came out, and this was like in the late 90s, early 2000s, like skating video game heyday. But this one did something completely different, and I was all about that. So I'm stoked for it. I like Jet Set Radio Future as well. I mean, right now we're just listing a bunch of things that I think AB, just looking at him, I can't tell if he can believe what I'm saying or he thinks I'm making shit up as I go along.
I started to like think about when baseball started tonight and other things like that. I figure you guys get really into like the intricacies of gaming. I don't know anything about it. So
I will say Mike totally strikes me as a Dreamcast guy. Totally been like, yeah,
oh,
Mike's
Dreamcast.
A Dreamcast hound.
The Dreamcast ruled. Like, it's one of those things that I remember, like, because it came out like right as I was getting to high school. So like that was Synthesis that had the good sports games before Sega really kind of screwed up the 2K franchise, and it was a good system. I had a good amount of fun with it. I even like Sonic Adventure. So big the cat fan over here.
Okay. Well, that's your gaming update for all the boys plus SB. You know, SB is a tinkerer at heart, so I think Animal Crossing is just like right up her alley.
Yeah, I had a feeling she'd enjoy it, and they do continue to update it with, you know, cute little new things to do from month to month. So yeah, it's got some longevity in that way.
She hasn't played it any less, I don't think, since she started it, and she's been playing honestly for a few months now.
Yeah, my issue is, if you look on the Twitter and follow, you know, the game at all, there's these like impossibly ornate or super well-designed islands, you know, largely from like people posting in kanji with like, you know, all these custom designs that they did themselves to perfectly recreate something in the game. And they'll be like just an entire themed island that looks, you know, unbelievable. And I look at that and I go, yeah, no, I'll obviously never be able to do anything approaching that. So why just even bother at all? Which is, you know, sort of how I approach a lot of things.
I was going to say, that's how I feel about life generally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you're like, oh, you were able to get the stuff to make the wrestling ring. I looked at my place and I was like, I have to add so much things around my island just to get the rating up high enough. Like I got, then after I got KK Slider, I was like, okay, what is there for me to do right now? And that was just like shrug and then fell out of it. And their islands are way too well developed and in depth, and I don't want to put that amount of time into it.
All right, well, if you want to ask us more questions about our Animal Crossing adventures, you can find us at Everything AEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. Please get these episodes as soon as they're ready. Give us a rating and review, a 5-star rating on the Apple Podcast app if you use that. And of course, if you want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/everythingelite, which we'll talk about later in the show. On the show tonight, we are going to play Elite or Delete. We're going to run down Dynamite from last night. We'll talk about the ratings. We'll talk about what's going to happen next week on Dynamite. And I think that's about it. That's pretty much what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk a little Deadly Draw. Don't you worry about that. That's coming up. But first, we'll play Elite or Delete.
Delete! Elite! Delete! Elite!
Nate, as is customary, you know, the idea, what I want you to do this time, Nate, I know we do this weekly. I want to give it a little spice this time. So what I'd like you to do is to pick what you think was the best thing that happened on Dynamite last night.
Oh, I really wish you'd told me that before. Started recording here.
Sorry, buddy.
Kind of putting me on the spot to just try and come up with one thing I liked about the show, which maybe is actually a little bit tougher this week, certainly than last week. Just a very weird show, weird energy. You know, almost felt like a different promotion than last week. This has been, you know, they've done that before where it's like one week you'll have, oh, it's the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And, you know, this has the real upstart new generation energy that you'd like to see, that sort of embodied, you know, your all ins. And then other weeks it's like, oh, here's Matt Hardy in an extended singles match and Jake Hager in a title challenge. And it's like real, you know, secondary promotion kind of shit. Anyway. The thing I liked on this show was the main event. I thought the main event was pretty much the strong point. There was a lot to like about it. It was set up by some strong promos. I'll call it the Ricky Starks promo in particular is being pretty strong. And that was one of the main things I liked about this match was, you know, they signed Ricky Starks, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. Immediately gave him a story and a little alliance so they can introduce him to the crowd and give him a way to get involved in what is now a main event storyline. He's now in the main event on national television, which is cool. And that's, you know, he's a very capable lost pole for this team of Brian Cage, so they can continue to beat Cage without, you know, hurting their big monster with the FTW title. And yeah, this match was pretty cool. There was a really cool spear on the apron right leading into the ad break. And then the finish was just awesome. You had John Moxley sliding across the apron and doing like a sliding trap arm bar. And then Darby doing, of course, the thumbtack. What would you call it? Plant? Thumbtack plant with the skateboard to Ricky Starks.
It was like a double stomp using the skateboard.
Yeah, I was trying to use a skateboarding term for it. I think, is that a plant when you just like go up a ramp and then just plant your feet on the wall or whatever? I think so. Anyway.
I have to consult Patrick Cosmos.
Yes, I think so. It wasn't a manual. It wasn't really an ollie. Anyway. And then Ricky Starks sold it like a jillion bucks. I don't know if that was a seller or just like, you know, he tweeted about being too pretty for the deathmatch shit. And he sold it like he was absolutely shocked to get all these tacks driven into him. And then all the way down to getting pinned with his leg twitching and looking like he was, you know, disassociating his mind from body was very cool. And I thought at least gave them a pretty legitimate and strong segment to end the show, even after it had a, you know, remarkably slow start.
Yeah. And I think the big thing, and you touched on it a little bit, was before the match, we had this backstage promo, like right next to the tunnels going out with both Taz and Ricky Starks. And it just had a different vibe given off there. Of course, they did the tease of where's Darby? Darby's music played and there was no sign of Darby. But then you immediately went back to Team Taz and Taz had another one of like his great promos. And then you give Ricky Starks, like it seemed like that they cut Ricky off, like with when they started to cue their music, but you basically gave him about 2 minutes for him just to cut a promo. And it was, when you compare that to a promo that happened in the segment previous that went on forever and felt incredibly scripted and a little bit contrived, this felt like just like Ricky Starks cutting a promo about like why he's with this, why he's his motivation. I thought that really ruled. And I feel like that it's going to be a lot of a harder job for AB and I to think up of positives on the show or the fair things. As you named easily, like this last half hour, or rather this last 20 minute segment was easily the best part of the show.
Yeah. This whole story is really good. They're really kind of hitting on all cylinders with the intersection of these four people and plus Taz, I guess. So, I mean, it's not only do you have a story that's really working, but it's your main event story. So that's really nice, you know, that it all kind of plays together, which is why I was really disappointed in the MJF segment. And I'm sure we'll talk about that as we go on, but not something I would have done when you have something that's cooking like this is. But Mike, what was in second place for you and in a distant second place for the best thing on this show?
Well, I guess my distant second place thing was the inset video they had for Diamante before her match with Hikaru Shida. We all kind of joke around that Nate loves vlogs and I love shoulder content. And this was a really solid minute and a half just getting the audience and getting the viewership to get to know Hikaru Shida's opponent, Diamante, and especially as it does certainly seem that Diamante is going to be sticking around a lot longer. There's been no news about a contract or anything like this, but with like the deadly draw, all the talk that's going on about the third hour, like having like a dedicated time for someone to get them over, especially when you compare it to someone earlier on the show, like Warhorse did not get the usual treatment that a Cody opponent usually gets. So I thought that that was kind of a smart use of time, and especially in a division that's been as maligned as the women's division. So I really enjoyed that. And, you know, it's something that like after like these two things, for me to like pick what would be my third favorite thing, it would be just be digging for gold. It's just you have to dig for this episode.
Well, I guess that that's going to fall on to me because yes, I did like Diamante video. I heard this. I didn't really see it, but I heard the discourse about the discourse, people complaining about Darby challenging Moxley for next weekend or next week because he's not one of the top contenders or whatever. But it's like, sometimes you just need a good little match with your champion. This wasn't even a title match. So the match didn't really deliver for me on the same level. But if you can get us interested slightly, you know, maybe it would have been smart to do this last week to kind of get you built up for this match. But they did a little thing and we got to learn about Diamante and that was nice.
Countering about people complaining about Darby being the number five contender, John Moxley defeated Brian Cage. He's number three. Defeated Brody Lee. He's number four. MJF, number one contender, launched a challenge for All Out. So that the only other person, if you're using the rankings as, oh, Darby's fifth, why don't you go higher, would have been Lance Archer. And what's Lance Archer been doing? So I think that that is a pretty like fake argument that people are developing. Sorry, I just want to interject that right there.
That's fine. I will, I guess I'll jump right into my favorite thing from the show, which is just like, okay, I hear people saying, and what you just said, Mike, it's true. They didn't really give Warhorse the kind of thing that they've given Ricky Starks, so they gave Eddie Kingston, you know, where you get to learn a little bit about them as they go into this match with Cody. They kind of just was like, here's fucking Warhorse, buddy, you know, do your thing. And I can understand why people don't like that, but I think there's a real distinction. I could be really wrong about this, but I think they have or are signing Eddie Kingston. I think Eddie Kingston's coming into this promotion and he got a little bit of time to shine because of that. But Warhorse, this is what I like about this. You don't have to sign Warhorse, but it's cool that they're bringing in guys like that and just throwing them on national TV to have a match, even if they don't sign Eddie. They threw him on TV and let him have a match. And Warhorse got to kind of show what he can do. His rate goes up for future bookings. He gets some exposure, and I'm sure he got a nice payday. So I just think it's cool that they brought this guy in to have a real match, not just an enhancement match.
Yeah, I didn't see those complaints, but, you know, you bring in Eddie Kingston and, you know, don't give him mic time would be a crime. So you have to do that. Diamante, you know, they do a video, inset video, to establish who she is because she's challenging your champion, right? Warhorse, you know, I don't know that well. I think this might be the first match I've seen, maybe the first match I've seen from this guy in this persona. But, I mean, they gave him a ton. They gave him a new theme song. He can take that new Mikey Ruckus original and take it to the indies with him. He got fireworks. He got a custom ring announcement. He got a little babyface spot after the match. And I don't, you know, obviously he's not a promo on the level of Eddie Kingston, but you know, it seems like he got over it from his social media following and this character that he does. And they gave him all the trappings of that character. They gave him, you know, they wheeled out the red carpet for fucking, you know, you're a guy who headbangs and has pyro and, you know, listens to metal or whatever. So that was, I think, a point in their favor is like, we're not going to just bring you out here as a geek. We're going to, you know, make sure people understand what the appeal of the Warhorse character is by giving you all this stuff. We're going to put over that you're the independent wrestling television champion and put over that that's meaningful and is not just some bullshit. So, you know, they honestly went above and beyond, I thought, in establishing the guy and protecting him a little bit.
Nate, I'm hurt a little that you don't recall us sitting next to each other watching Jake Parnell fight for the 0-1 USA World Championship.
That's why I edited myself and said that I had never seen him in this persona because I had a vision in my head of, wait a minute, I did see a 0-1 USA title match, didn't I? So yes, we did. I actually did remember that, but I was not 100% that it was Jake Parnell. The other guy was definitely the stiff robo ginger, Gary J, right?
That's right. It was.
Nailed it.
I think they took that match around the country.
and of course, that title is much more different than the 0-1 USA Northeast Championship.
That's
different
right.
Different thing.
This is, I think it's the world championship. I don't know. It might just be the American championship or some shit.
I mean, who knows with that? I do know originally that was like a Steve Corino thing that I think has just completely spiraled out from there. But it's interesting.
Wait, who is the 0-1 guy? Was that Hashimoto?
Hashimoto, sorry, 0-1, yes.
Okay, yeah, there was a, I don't know why, I looked this up. The 0-1 USA would run a yearly Shinya Hashimoto
Memorial show?
Tournament. Yeah, and Adam Cole was the winner.
I mean,
he's the heir apparent to Shinya Hashimoto.
Yeah, that's what I'll say. He definitely is the heir apparent to Shinya Hashimoto. That no truer words have been spoken. It's interesting how this Cody thing is and how the TNT title is, and you have Warhorse with this. And I actually want to push back a little bit of what you said, AB. Eddie Kingston's still under NWA rolling contract for a while.
That's right. You told me that yesterday. That's right.
Yeah, just wanted to do like that. It's interesting, though, because as I talked about on Patreon, they had a brand new independent wrestling title for War Horse at this weekend of shows that he was on in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Didn't get to bring out that new flashy white title that they had. It's like white strap and all this. So they did do a lot of things that I think like got the character though. So I think that you're dead on about that. I just find it interesting that all those trappings, they didn't let another promotion's belt be on TV when in other cases they have before.
But only partner promotions.
That's fair.
You would think, like, I don't know. Pretty sure Billy Corgan needs the money to keep running the NWA, so you could probably buy out Eddie's contract for a reasonable sum.
That could be an avenue that using Careforth, I could see that happening.
Because, I mean, his tea house closed. Obviously, the Pumpkins aren't playing any shows. Zwan not playing any shows.
I mean, that's so
any income streams he could get, I'm sure he would take.
Yeah, and the last set of Pumpkin shows did not do very well at all. So that could be a possibility.
I said I did confirm that it was the 01 USA Heavyweight Championship. I just wanted to be clear about that. I did some searches. There's also apparently the 01 USA Illinois Championship. So this is not to be confused for that, even though we saw it defended within the state of Illinois.
Hmm.
Yeah, but Jake Parnell, unfortunately, lost that title to Jake Durden.
Any relation to Tyler Durden?
The spelling is a little different, so I don't think so. But yeah, anyway, I thought there was going to be something funny here because I thought Kohei Sato was the original holder of this title, and it'd be funny the where it went. But it looks like some guy called Frank Wyatt was the original holder. So
that's just imagine the 01 USA World Championship video crawl that could go on that would go from Kohei Sato to Jake Parnell, not Warhorse, but Jake Parnell, and then to Frank Durden. Like, just imagine what a bunch of champions. Totally in the lineage and the legacy of Shinya Hashimoto.
That's right. All right. Well, I think there's a lot more that we didn't like about this show. So, Nate, tell me what you would have deleted from this show.
Well, I feel bad doing this because I obviously took everybody's number one with a bullet choice for the good thing on the show. I'm going to do the same for this segment. you guys have mentioned some of these other things, so maybe you would want to talk about that. The opening match, the 10-man spot fest of Best Friends and Jurassic Express versus the Inner Circle, just immediately set this show off with the wrong tone. Hard to identify exactly why. The crowd was definitely smaller than it has been. Orange Cassidy came in and did his little soft kicks to kick the show off. They've been using that sparingly as a mid-match sort of spot that, again, you know, relies on the crowd going oh and selling it huge. And he came out and did it right away, and the crowd just didn't sell it, and it was like, oh no, this isn't right, and just set the whole thing off weird. The production was not ideal. You got a lot of, you know, you would get shots of like the Inner Circle preparing for a catch at ringside, which totally interrupted the rhythm of your everybody does a dive spot. And it just made it all seem, more contrived and fake and less dynamic than you would want it to. You know, they did. They kind of got it on track. Obviously, these are professionals who sort of know what they're doing in this kind of match. But, you know, when you have something that seems so off kilter and again contrived early in the match, and then you build to the big thing where everybody runs in, does their finisher, and then gets hit by the next guy's finisher, it just makes it seem all the more fake and manufactured. So and then of course the finish, almost forgot the finish, just the absolute dregs of pro wrestling finishes directly out of the WWE playbook, where Sammy Guevara was distracted by someone's music and got pushed off the turnbuckle by Matt Hardy because Matt Hardy is feuding with him because he, I think, likes Sammy, but wants him out of the Inner Circle, and his way of achieving this is going to be costing him matches, I guess. It was fucking very bad bullshit.
And it's something where having this match open up the show when they've had such a strong I guess, precedent set where it's all like they like having the hot match starting off the show, hot match, fierce action. Nothing like a really fierce and hot match and get out of Jake Hager to start off the show. And when you would think that like in these 10 man tags, you'd have them so that you could have your more work rate, your more active wrestlers be the people that could perform most in the match, so that you save Jake Hager for like his 90 seconds or a minute and a half, or actually 90 seconds, this is a minute and a half, Mike, or like the 3 minutes that you would have out of them. But no, this is a match that felt like there was like way too much like Jake Hager and Luchasaurus. And that was like a real bummer with that. And it's just like, and then now next week we're going to have a 12 man tag. And it's going to be something where like, did they know that they completely just whiffed on this one? It's like, no, we want to have a bigger tag match with people that are going to see like we can do a fun like match like this, because they're coming off like the great 8-man tag that they've had in recent months, like with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus in there. So like, it's not like that this is a problem with the promotion. They just like put a like a really just boring match that ate up like the first 20 minutes of the show, and it was completely unsatisfying because you had that WWE ass finish that Nate brought up.
Yeah, it sucked.
I also just don't want to see Chris Jericho in the first match on this show, like ever. Like, yeah, you have to protect him and just like act like it's a real wrestling program. You know, I've complained about the order they put things in, and they constantly put like the tag title match in this first segment. And I get it, because they want to do high energy, high work rate stuff in the first match, because they, you know, think that's their calling card or whatever, or that's going to keep people's attention. But if you fail at doing that, which they did in here, then it all falls apart. And, you know, I think kind of hurt Chris Jericho's stature by being involved in this at the very top of the show.
Well, and it set a whole bad environment for the whole show, as you were alluding to there, of like, it's kind of hard to come back from this. You know, when the week before we were saying, wow, how are they going to top this Eddie Kingston match? That's really the wrong way of looking at it. It's that the Eddie Kingston match was so good that you're hyped up, and it's going to make you forgiving, really, of everything else on the show because the first thing is so good. Maybe that's, you know, what the thing about Nitro was that the Lucha matches that they would put on first were so fun and so exciting that you didn't give as much of a shit about the shitty Hulk Hogan thing at the end of the show, you know? So, yeah, it just put a bad taste in my mouth. And it's like, I was excited for it. Like a 10-man match is a good idea for an opening segment, I think, because you can just do a bunch of cool stuff. But they didn't do any of the cool stuff. There were like no cool spots, really.
It was slow.
Match. Yeah.
It was slow and boring and plotting, which that's kind of what they were. I had to check my notes to make sure this happened. It wasn't a fever dream. Exactly how Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy versus Jericho and Hager was the week before. Like, it was that exact theme, but you've brought down now Santana Ortiz with it. You brought down Best Friends with it. It just sucked. And it did get you like in a bad mood that like, even after this, like Cody and Warhorse was not a bad match, but you were put in such a bad mood that just like you're trying to pull up from the tailspin. And really it was far too late when the show truly like kind of peaked and was able to pull itself out of it.
All right. Well, give us your delete pick, Mike.
I'm going to delete the MJF promo. It is, so MJF has now made a challenge towards Jon Moxley for the main event of All Out, where he wants to be the, as he says, he's undefeated. He is not undefeated. He lost a tag match there, but that's a plot point that they've made into a thing. But he said like that, and he's doing this under running a political campaign thing. There's a lot of like weird pseudo political stuff that they were like trying to be like, hey, we're going to have a debate. We're going to have that. I'm like, guys, I don't want to think about that right now. But then you have MJF doing this, and this was like a 15-minute thing that had a lot of not just like lightly veiled shots, but just like corny shots at WWE. And it's something where I feel like that since the end of the Cody and MJF feud, they've given him more and more mic time, and I don't think that that's something that MJF is very good at. I think that his longer promos like this one end up just going on and on and on. And this all felt like a big takeoff of when Impact, I guess it was 4 years ago with EC3, they had like EC3 campaigning to get a title shot, campaigning to be the champion. And it just is one of those things that I know that like MJF has been someone that pretty much since Double or Nothing and after the match with Jungle Boy, he's kind of just been there, and they kind of wrapped up the MJF and Wardlow versus the Jurassic Express feud, and it's like that's done. But like you're kicking this off here, we're about 5 weeks away from All Out, but we still don't have much of anything there, and it's like he's like bringing up this thing. It's like, oh, John Moxley is the person who controls the program. John Moxley is the person that is controlling his matches. He's picking like the top contenders according to the ranking system. So like he's already like trying to be like I am like the force of right. And he's not, because they've properly have set up the things that according to their rankings, which it's their ranking. So hand wave. It did like this. And then it just went on. And it was just one of those things that this was like the capper on me. I was going like, this is a bad show. This was a show I did not enjoy. And this was the thing I enjoyed the least on it.
Yeah. You know, I don't think the content of the promo was that bad. You know, maybe your issue with the content of the promo is like he made like some correct babyface points in it, which, you know, it isn't really, you know, out of lines or out of bounds for a heel character. But, you know, his criticism of the promotion, you know, and their relation to WWE and how they should distinguish themselves, you know, there was some truth to that. I thought the artifice or the manufactured nature of it, where they had to put all these trappings of it being a campaign thing on it, is really what rubbed me the wrong way. I can't imagine why they think now is a good time to be like, hey, let's do some good old fashioned Americana election shit. Cause yeah, nobody fucking wants to deal with that whatsoever. It's not cute. It's not cute when this was going to be the site of like the Republican National Convention. And you know, it is well-trod ground. I know, you know, long before TNA did it, I know Drew Gulak was doing it in CZW. That part, you know, maybe if this is a callback to CZW and MJF does have the yellow and black logo and shit that he's doing now, that's kind of fun, I guess. But I don't know, Drew Gulak pretty much does this kind of shtick better. And this is just, you know, a totally different world than 2011 or whenever he was doing that. And yeah, I don't want to engage with your fucking fake campaign speech. I don't, you know, it's long after Super Tuesday. So why is Super Wednesday even a thing? That doesn't make any sense. But you know, at least he's getting to his title challenge, which is what makes sense given where he's been, the momentum that he's built up, I suppose, in terms of wins and losses anyway. But yeah, you know, just putting this big, this big construct, this big fake framing device around this promo didn't make it seem any more real. And that's not to his benefit.
My big problem is that it's a departure in a lot of ways from the real logic of the MJF character, in that he has told this same story about his relationship with Cody, that Cody's pulling the strings and Cody's abusing his power, and that's what's screwing MJF over. And then he used basically the same logic to go after John Moxley. Well, this is bad leadership from John Moxley. And that, it just makes it ring hollow. And that's that, you can use that in a way that works for a heel like MJF for sure. But it didn't feel that way. Like that's what they were going for, of like, oh, I'm kind of playing with the thing that I normally do, and now I'm being disingenuous by doing it to Moxley. It just kind of feels like this is the idea that we have for MJF, and whoever is the big person he's going to go after, that's what we're going to plug it into. But it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially considering that Cody has a title. So they could have worked the exact same gimmick or angle with Cody. I know he's not the champion of the whole promotion, but they're presenting the titles supposedly as if they're equal. So, you know, the rankings are leading up to either of those titles. So I just kind of hated that in a lot of ways. You guys have talked about the actual, like the presentation of the promo, which I think was bad. I think, which I'm the low guy, maybe worldwide on MJF as a promo. So, you know, I think at this point he's had a better, his work has been better than his promos, certainly recently. So I think that's like a really weird flip around for MJF. But yeah, for all the reasons you guys said, I just kind of wanted to turn this off and make it go away. And it made me less interested in an MJF Moxley match, especially when, as I was mentioning earlier, you already have this really fun story going on with the four guys who were in the main event. So pulling Mox away from that, I was saying on Light the other day, I would redo Mox and Cage on top at All Out. And you can put Darby and Ricky Starks underneath in that. You can do a big Cody match. And you got a fucking card. You can do Cody and MJF. That's what I would have done. You got a card right there. I think this hurts not just MJF. It hurts Mox and that whole story. And so it just bums me out.
And it hurts Cage.
Yes, that's true.
It hurts Cage. And by proxy of hurting Cage, it hurts Moxley. Because now Cage is feuding with this guy who has his next immediate shot lined up. And then his shot down the road lined up.
That doesn't bother. I like having multiple storylines and feuds brewing at once. I think that's a positive of the promotion. We said the same thing when Cage was feuding with Moxley and Darby at the same time, and those have sort of coalesced. I think it's good that MJF has gotten these wins and gotten big wins, and now he has made this challenge because that's the logical thing for him to do. It didn't make sense for him to be out of the title picture given the way that he was being presented. So, it makes sense that he would come out and say, I'm calling my shot. I'm doing what I want to do. I'm making this challenge to the champion. I don't give a fuck what he's dealing with later because I'm concerned about myself. That is all fine with me. I think the issue is he comes across like a better Miz, and it's like, oh, you're very studied sort of, your methodology for doing promos is like you read a textbook on doing heel promos or something, and there's just not that that authenticity to it. Still better than The Miz, but it's like an advanced form of that.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot. I think that's a great comparison. It reminds me a lot of people. I just feel like I always hear there was a time when it was like, oh, Miz is so fucking good. He's so underrated. And I'm like, I just think he's bad. Like, I don't think...
Yeah, he's definitely bad.
MJF is way better than The Miz, I think.
MJF is better, but you can see like he even does like, oh, it's my time to talk now. And it's like, okay, yeah. That's like almost directly from The Miz, which was hack when he was doing it.
Right.
And yeah. He's just, he's got the WWS, heel catchphrase stinger on the front of his music. It's just very, the Ben Shapiro, the Jacob Wool of being a heel or whatever. It's not authentic. It's whatever this, fake handed down version of being a heel is. Again, he's executing it, I think, pretty well and better than a lot of other people, but it's still just not the same.
And not to further belabor the point, it's frustrating because he has kind of gone into this route, whereas the whole road with like him and Cody was like you didn't have to rely upon those tropes because it was such an obvious story and he was effective at avoiding Cody, setting up the hurdles to Cody they thought that Cody was never going to do, and it led to Cody overcoming them and they had their match. Like he didn't have to rely on all the things there, and then he was able to use the betrayal as like the big thing with him and Cody. And whereas with Moxley, it's like Miz shit and it's lame.
Yeah, there's nothing there to sink your teeth into for an MJF Mox feud. I guess that's why you build an angle. So I guess we'll give him a chance to build it before we bury it.
That's why they put all this rigmarole around it by making it a fake campaign speech. It's like, well, we don't have a real issue here, so we've got to dress it up in some way that the title challenge seems unique and not just cast off.
That's it, Nate. That's like all the shit around it that made it feel worse is like an admission that we know there's nothing there. It is a fucking political event, right? It is a convention. We know that we don't have anything to offer you, so let's make it look big. Let's do pomp and circumstance.
There you go.
Great point, Nate. I hate to really put you over this much, but I thought that was a great point.
I'm very smart.
You are very smart. All right, I want to bury some other WWE-ass shit. All right, let's go. You have somebody pop up on this episode who hasn't even been on WWE TV in a long time, wasn't very good when they were on WWE TV, has done a lot of shit that's just, cringe-inducing that we see, passed around on social media from time to time. And I'm, of course, talking about Matt Cardona.
Good.
Okay.
He's going to get mad if you went the other direction. You almost had me. You hit me in the first half.
I saw how this was going. I was like, oh, this is going to be a classic AB switcheroo here. And well done. Well done.
All right. Here's my thing. Okay. WWE almost said AEW has earned a lot of goodwill from me or built up a lot of goodwill with me that they can bring in people who I'm not really that excited about. And they do a pretty good job with them. I don't think they've brought in anyone and the presentation of them has been worse than I thought it could be when they came in. You know, they've at least gone down the middle with just about everybody. Even Jake Hager. It's like, they've probably got about the best you can get out of Jake Hager. You could have just not brought him in, I guess, but they've done a fine job. So Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona, I'm like, okay, I'm willing to kind of see where it goes. But here's the thing. We already have a Matt Cardona in this promotion, and it's called Sean Spears. Cody's friend, who doesn't really have anything else to offer, isn't a high-level worker, isn't a high-level promo, isn't a high-level anything. So I'm not really sure what the purpose is, and I don't know who he's for. Like, this guy hasn't been a major player on WWE TV in, like, what, a fucking decade? I mean, literally.
Well, like or years. Ever. Or ever.
But I mean, who is tuning in? That's my thing. Who's tuning in to watch this guy on TV? I don't think anybody. And it's not like the Cody thing. So Matt Cardona is Cody in a lot of ways, right? Like, they have a lot of similarities as far as the level that they were at when they were in WWE, the kind of worker they were. But Cody had to go through the Indies, go to Japan, go through Ring of Honor, and do a lot of things to, like, get on a different level and learn a lot of new things. And Matt Cardona hasn't done any of that shit. And so it's just, this can't be good, is all I'm saying.
So the real difference between Cody and Matt Cardona is, I'm just trying to use a non-gendered. Cody worked up the nerve to say, fuck this, I'm not doing this, I'm making my own way, I'm setting out on my own, I'm taking the hard path to getting over and becoming a star and building something myself. And Matt Cardona never, ever, ever did that. He just ate the WWE shit for years and years and years and years and years. That's the big difference. Now, I understand why they brought him in. And I think we'd heard in the DM that there's like effectively a hiring freeze with the exception of Matt Cardona. First of all, he was like with Colt Cabana, the guy who pioneered sort of the getting over through other media routes, through your YouTube videos and your podcasts. And AEW has, really got over and came into existence through BTE. So, you know, they're paying some level of respect to that. Also, AEW has made a history of, you know, even with guys like Warhouse, if you've proven you can get over somewhere else, then we think you can get over again, and we're going to give you a chance to do it. They've held pretty true to that throughout their existence. So I understand from those two aspects of it. But I just think he's the wrong kind of nepotism. I said this, I think in the lead up to the promotion getting started, that, you know, it's great for Cody to bring in his friends and his buddies and, you know, the legends and stuff that he really likes when it's somebody good, when it's, have to think, Tully Blanchard, or shit. Who else did Cody bring in that we like?
Well, Dustin.
Dustin, sure. But when you do that and you bring in your friend because they're your friend, and it's Sean Spears and it's Matt Cardona, and you're picking those people over talent like Rusev or Leo Rush, then you're just making poor decisions for personal reasons, is what I think it comes down to the bottom line. They're just not talents at the same level as far as my interest. And I, you know, it kind of sucks, but I just don't really want to give Zack Ryder a fair shake at showing what he can do. I'd like, you know, the guy got humiliated on WWE television for however many years and just continued to eat it. And I understand that, there's people were afraid to lose their jobs because everyone's afraid to lose your job and you want to have the comfort of a nice income, and WWE's the industry leader and all this shit. But the WWE fucking sucks. And if you take their shit for long enough, if you're a Cesaro and you're there and you don't mean shit and you just keep doing it day after day, you're not a star. That's not what a star does. You're the guy who shows up to his 9-to-5 and does his job, which is great. We love workers on this show. Like, we want them to be empowered as much as possible, but in the context of wrestling, I want to see stars. I want to see larger than life. And when you eat the WWE shit for long enough, that ship has sailed.
It's also something that I totally get your point about someone that, like, why should we give him a fair shake? It's also operating on his YouTube stuff, the Long Island IC, I think that's what it was called or whatever. And like when there
it was actually worse because it's like a 30-year-old reference at this point. Z, yeah. A true Long Island story.
Oh,
does the E channel still exist even?
I thought he had to sign it all over. I thought that was like part of the deal was both him and Austin Creed had signed that stuff over to them. I think that they had it. But like my point is that was 9 years ago. That was 2011. And that was like the big deal that was made because it was happening at the same time as all the punk stuff. And if this was 2013 and they're like, hey, this is a guy who got screwed over. This is a guy that got over on his own. Totally understand that he wrote out the contract and got punished for this. But it's 9 years later. Matt Cardona is older than all three of us. He is someone who has done virtually nothing other than like Northeast Indies and just WWE shit. And unless they're trying to do this as like a veiled way of getting SponsCon for their new action figure series and like get like them to put them over and like do like that on his action figure series, it just like with like you brought up someone like Leo Rush and you brought up Handsome Miro, and with like Leo Rush, the jury's still out on if that was it from this weekend or not. So like you understand like there's a hesitance there, but you also have other people that are the options that have either chosen new landing places or have not chosen yet. And one of the big names you bring in is Matt Cardona, and you haven't come in as Cody's friend. We've seen this within the last 18 months. This is like very similar to how stuff was going before with Cody. And it's just like, oh, when is Matt Cardona going to turn on Cody? Because everyone else has. Or is he just going to be like his geek friend that's going to pick up falls, that's going to take falls from in tag matches? And wait, wasn't that QT's job? So there's just no like reason for it. And it makes you question.
They should take the budget for Matt Cardona's performance enhancing supplements, redirect it to Warhorse's column, and then we're talking. Get Warhorse with those fucking deltoids, and then we've got a superstar on our hands.
Whatever blood spinning, whatever like PRP, I mean, whatever you want to do there.
I got to give Matt Cardona credit for two things. One, getting on the gas, unlike some cowards on the show. And two, just sitting at home and taking the...
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
WWE's paychecks for years. I mean, I do respect that. Just like not even he, no, that's not even a 9-to-5 guy for a long time. My man just sat at home.
I do respect that, but I respect that in a vacuum. But if you do that, you don't get to come back 10 years later and say, I'm a star now. Hey, it's important that I showed up to be on the wrestling show.
He's not a star.
You give up that opportunity. Yeah.
My guess is, I mean, even if anybody watching knew who he was, which obviously like people like us know who he is, but it's like, there's nobody watching who thought, man, I used to think this guy was really good. I bet he can really go now that he's freed of the WWE's chains.
I mean, he was getting organically over on his own back when the WWE had, I don't know, 4 million viewers. So significantly more popular then than the WWE is now. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, he was over. Yeah. I just mean, it's not like he's a high level anything.
Right.
Worker, promo, nothing really.
Yeah, maybe, you know, he was a high level guy at you know,
doing
having
content,
the,
I guess.
Right. Doing the shoulder content and coming up with a couple bits.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe it'll work out. You start to worry sometimes about Cody's influence on things and Brandy's influence on things. Those things can be concerning at times. So we just see where it goes. All right. Ratings this week. Kind of a boring week for ratings. Everything stayed pretty much the same. AEW dropped down about, 80,000 viewers to 773. Six in the demo with a 0.3. NXT up about 65,000. I'm not good at math. To 707,000. Up to 28th in the demo with a 0.18. Pretty strong performances considering that there was a big baseball game that did not actually end up doing that well.
Welcome again to the Church of the Demo God. I, of course, am.
We have bed music for this yet? Because we need to get some organs or a choir.
Oh, I was going to drop that on y'all as a surprise anyways. Yeah, I'll find something for this.
Beautiful.
We are here. I am your guest pastor for this week. I'd like to thank the Demo God for allowing me to speak here. I am Brother Pastor Michael Spears from the Mountainside Congregation, but I have come here to talk about the mysteries and the wonders of the Demo God and about how these ratings have come out over the last few weeks. So we have been blessed by not a terrible drop-off against stiff competition as AEW beat a nationally televised Major League Baseball game with one of the huge West markets and the LA Dodgers. But don't rest on laurels, because what the demo God giveth, the Demo God can taketh. Next week could be revelations, friends, with the NBA having their return tonight. And it looks like there will be a doubleheader next Wednesday, my friend. So we cannot take the Demo God for certain. The only television show that performed better and men 18 to 49 was, weirdly enough, Tucker Carlson, who had a 0.47 to AEW's 0.39. And it was a very weird night on TV. However, this weirdness also extends over to NXT, as only repeats and new shows did worse in people from the age of 18 to 34 than NXT. So it's going to, we might be having some converging waters on us, much like Noah and his ark the next week. We might be entering the book of revelations in the end times. But if we trust in the Demo God and understand that the Demo God both giveth and taketh and is a tremendous mystery, we might be able to further understand ratings. And now let's bow our heads in remembrance of the Demo God.
Amen. Yeah, I mean, NBA is going to destroy things.
It's going to be bad. Real bad. But, it's supposed to be a doubleheader, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, bad job out of them putting on their worst show in a long time on the week before NBA comes back. They should have thought about that.
Yeah, and it's something also, now that I'm out of the bit, they put on such a good show 2 weeks ago that usually you would expect like a huge drop-off, because weirdly, bad shows get more viewers the next week, and then great shows have had like significant drop-off. This was like one of the lighter drop-offs between great shows. So who knows? Like,
yeah.
The one thing I'll say is that they'll probably still remain in like the top 10 in the demo on cable, because everyone's going to take it to the face. Like, this is a moon landing.
Well, you can already guess that NXT is going to have more total viewers than AEW next week, because NXT old people only watch WWE content, and the very cool people who watch AEW also like to watch other things that are cool. So they'll probably dip out for some NBA.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that the NXT probably, I would say that I could see NXT being up to like 715 next week, and the demo could be real ugly there, but AEW probably will go from like, they were 0.3 this week. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a drop down to like a 0.19. Like, I could see it being like that. They lose a third of the demo because of NBA. I mean, am I off base in thinking about?
No, I think it's going to be very bad for them. All right, let's get into what else happened on the show last night. We already talked about the opening 10-man best friends Orange Cassidy, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus defeated the Inner Circle. Luchasaurus pinned Sammy Guevara after a bicycle kick. There was some interference, quote unquote, by Matt Hardy. After the match, Matt Hardy taunted Sammy Guevara. But we've already talked about that. There was a Jon Moxley promo. He says he tries to stay out of people's business. He has a rule: if people leave him alone, he leaves them alone. He thought his thing with Cage was settled, but then Cage laid his hands on Mox's compadre, Darby Allin, a guy half his size. He says Ricky Stark's fallen in with the wrong crowd. You all tried to jump someone two-on-one, so let's see how you look when the odds are even. And that was, of course, building up the main event tag match for later in the show. Next up, the TNT Championship. Cody defeated Warhorse with the figure four. After the match, the Beaver Boys came out to attack Cody. Warhorse tried to save him. Didn't quite work. Beaver Boys beat him down. And then the aforementioned Matt Cardona comes out and makes the ultimate save.
Yeah, I also want to shout out, there was a lot of to-do about AEW. It was like, oh, no, we want to help the indies. We don't, when they were signing people up, then a lot of the indie talent was already depleted because NXT had already signed everybody up. And it's like, yeah, okay. They've actually, done an impressive job of keeping their word on that. They've let their talent work independent shows. And here they are just giving, again, a ton of shine to a guy who's an indie talent and not signed to our knowledge. So, got to give them props. They stuck by their word on that.
Yeah, they can help like make some stars for the indies. So that seems to be what they're doing, but we'll see. Of course, when it comes down to it, they'll sign whoever they want, I'm sure. Inner Circle next was out to talk to Tony Schiavone. Jericho said he was furious about what's going on with the Inner Circle. Of course, they had lost again earlier in the night, so they're going to start drawing some lines in the sand. Sammy tells Matt Hardy that it isn't over between them. And then Jericho announces that on August 12th, he's going to have a rematch with Orange Cassidy. And when he beats him again, Orange is going to pay him $7,000 cash to replace his jacket. But for next week, there's going to be an Orange Cassidy, Chris Jericho debate with a special guest moderator that's going to blow people's minds.
So who would blow our minds from Chris Jericho's perspective and would be an appropriate person in a moderator role?
Larry King.
Joe Rogan.
Those would both be good. Joe Rogan would really set a lot of people off, so that would be fun.
Oh God, the Joe Rogan discourse would be insane.
That would be a big get for them.
Jerry, pull up the video.
The problem is you can't. Like, I was trying to think of like Turner related people so that you can have like an NBA thing, but like, you can't have Shaq or Charles Barkley because they're too big of stars. Like, they would outshine Jericho and Orange Cassidy.
And yeah, in addition to being, 2 feet taller than them.
Yes, so you don't want to do that. I don't know, or a CNN person, I guess, you could have that would kind of give it more of a politics-y feel.
I don't think Jericho, I think this is somebody that Jericho had the specific opinion of blow your mind. I don't think he would say that if it was like, oh yeah, we got Wolf Blitzer. That's something neat.
Anderson Cooper showing up.
My other thought is Scott Steiner.
I mean, Scott Steiner would be...
That would blow my mind.
It's not a far drive from where he is in Georgia to Jacksonville for this, but I mean, he also almost died wrestling last year, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Joe Rogan would be like the really like just amusement one just because of the reaction that it would get, but also would very well fit in because now I'm imagining people going onto Joe Rogan that would just be insane from AEW, and I think that would be... Jericho hasn't done Joe Rogan before, has he?
Not to my knowledge, but that would be like an actual good get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna get.
I mean, talking objectively from the perspective of star power, it's like, oh, Joe Rogan has a huge following.
Yeah,
it's gonna be like Duff McKagan.
Duff McKagan. What if you got
Axe? It's gonna be Corey motherfucking Taylor.
Oh, Corey shit. Taylor.
There we go. Yes,
that'd be so sick.
Corey Taylor will show up in Jacksonville. At least we know that.
And perform his new song.
At least we know that for sure Murder Brian would be watching then. But yeah, no, like Joe Rogan would be a big get, and that's not making a comment on his commentary and who he gives air time to. He is literally the biggest podcast in the world. So it would be a big get.
No, it's going to be, who was the guy that Jericho was feuding with recently about singing?
Oh, I think I saw something about that.
I mean, he feuds with everyone, like, yeah, at a certain point.
It's a guy from a big band who was, like, making some comment about Jericho singing, and they kind of went back and forth. So anyway, it'd be fun if they got him. But I don't even know who it is, so I guess it wouldn't be that fun. Okay.
Good job.
Thanks. Next up, we see Tony Schiavone in a conference room. We got Mega Parekh, folks, is there. FTR's there. They have a lawyer next to them. That's what they say that he is anyway. He doesn't actually do anything the rest of this segment. Because FTR says they need a tag team consultant. Okay, Arn Anderson walks in to look at the contract to make sure it has what they want in it. Isn't that the point of a lawyer?
Yeah, so they brought in Arn to be their second lawyer here. And his version of contract review here was he whispered to them. And then they were like, hey, that thing that we agreed on and is in the contract, tag team appreciation night, that's really going to happen, right? Of course, Mega Parekh, the lawyer, was like, yeah, it's in the contract. So, yeah, we're bound to it. You don't need to mention it to me again. It's in front of you.
They also clearly did this at a table, so we couldn't tell that Mega Parekh is as tall as FTR.
Yeah, and they did it at a table, and the lighting was really bad here. And that really distracted me because usually when they've done this stuff, they've like made sure like the lighting was good. But wherever they chose to shoot this, this had to have been like somewhat of a spur of a moment thing, because definitely kind of looked like a spur of a moment thing in comparison to other stuff they've done in this nature.
I think was this the same room where they did the Shawn Spears versus Cody contract signing on Road 2? It was like in the DDP studio somewhere. That was my guess.
We've definitely seen this on Road 2 before.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen them do this. No, not this room. The room that they've always done stuff on the Road 2 would always have like the whiteboards, or they would do stuff at TIA Field.
That's a different room. I think the Cody and Spears one was this, I think, same side room. But the most interesting thing about this, and I couldn't tell if this was a shoot or just some weird point that they wanted to get across, was Adam Page comes out with whiskey, pours everybody, a glass of whiskey, has one glass that he says was going to be for Tony Schiavone, but since Arn is there, he pours it for Arn, and then Arn makes a point of saying, no, I'm not drinking that. Was that just a shoot that Adam Page did that, and Arn's like, no, I don't drink anymore? Or did they want to make the point here that, no, Arn's not drinking anymore?
I mean, I think that there was also a comment that they said that they're like, oh, yeah, we'll drink that, and then the idea was that it was really cheap whiskey, and maybe Arn was like, this shit, I'm not drinking it, and just poured it out like that. Maybe that was it.
No, he said it. He moved it away from him. It was definitely a thing about not drinking in general.
Yeah, he said something like, not anymore, or something like that. Yeah, right. I got the sense that Arn is like a former drinker and not a drinker anymore, but I don't know whether it was... Why do you think they wanted to want to make a point of it rather than Adam Page just fucking up?
It could have been, it might have been like an awkward shoot thing to happen for Adam Page to go in there and offer the guy a drink when he's, recovering or whatever, or just no longer drinking. So that seemed, that would be maybe a faux pas that you maybe wouldn't include in the finish thing. The other option is that was intentional. I mean, he brought four glasses. He knew who was going to be at the table. And they made a point of Arn. No, I don't drink.
Yeah, I don't know. It did like have an awkward energy there when Arn was like trying to decide what he was going to say, I thought. So right. I could see it being legitimate, but I'm also a mark, so I don't know.
That was the most interesting thing to me on the segment. The rest of it was, a bunch of, I don't know. You would, maybe not. Not spectacular acting or anything. It's a lot of like, but it's also a very difficult spot to put these wrestlers in. Like, hey, pretend you're at a fake contract signing where we have to get over these specific things about your contract. Like, there's no winning way to do that, really.
Yeah, we have to get over that your matches are going to have a 10-second count. Like every other tag match in the promotion. That's literally
strictly
the
enforced.
Rule.
Strictly enforced.
They're going to have a tag rope. They're going to be the only team in the company that has a tag.
It's like, yeah, no, we have to put in the contract the rules are strictly enforced. Well, it's like, okay, if it's a rule, then it's supposed to be enforced in the first place. This is a lot of people doing victory laps, like, oh, haha, Trump's going to delay the election. Everybody's, all these dumbass libs are so shocked that, it's all been run in the honor system. It's like, the entire construction of society is, kind of dependent on the honor system. You can't put in the Constitution, he really can't do this, and then be surprised when like somebody tries to break the rule. Like there's no way to compel these things besides everybody getting on board with what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I saw this thing on Twitter of, I forget where it was, but they were literally people just blocking the entrances to the eviction court in whatever town it was in.
I think it's New Orleans.
And I've been thinking a lot during all this about how basically everything bad that happens, there are people in society who allow it to happen. Like, if, and there's reasons why we're kind of like beat down to the point of not being able to stop a lot of these things from happening. So I'm not saying that it's people's fault that these things happen. I'm just saying, if all of us decided one day there's not going to be any more evictions, we could just make that happen. We could just stop letting evictions happen, period. And I guess they could also just, all the wrestlers could stop working if they don't strictly enforce a 10 count, you know. Really, that's real labor power in action.
Yeah. Just very slowly be like, oh, yeah, you're going to enforce the rules, right? I want that in the contract. Well, putting it in the contract still necessitates that somebody make the direct action to enforce it.
Right.
You know, you can't put, I super duper mean this in a contract right. And underline it three times, and now it is more effective somehow.
Right. It's not like you're also bringing in your own ref who's going to definitely enforce the 10 count or whatever. Yeah. They'll probably do that at some point. They're also going to have a tag team appreciation night on August 12th. And the only match we know that's announced for that is Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy in a singles match. Very good. The only thing we left out was that when Hangman came in to celebrate, he said, to the Mid-Atlantic. That was his toast.
Yeah, this of course has been developing on BTE, which we recap on our weekly AEW Light Show.
That's right. Tag team titles, we actually haven't talked about this yet. Hangman Page and Kenny Omega defeated the Dark Order team of Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. Hangman Page pinned Uno. After the match, Brody Lee sent... We saw Anna Jay. She was back. And so Brody Lee sent Colt and Anna Jay to the back. This is kind of his thing now where he doesn't want the newer recruits to see him get mad, I suppose. Yells at the Beaver Boys, starts attacking them. Hangman's laughing. Brody does not appreciate that Hangman is laughing. And then he says, Kenny, thanks for showing up this week. We really appreciate it. Actually, Hangman really appreciates it. The Bucks come out. Some creepers come out to kind of surround the ring. Brody says that Kenny has pissed him off, or maybe it was Hangman has pissed him off for the last time. And then FTR attacks from behind with the foam cooler again. And basically the team of the Elite and FTR win, or you know, they clear everybody out, and this sets up the 6-man match that's going to be on, or the 12-man match that's going to be on next week.
I thought this was a pretty strong tag match. I thought this, at least for like the Super Smash Brothers, I felt like that this was a, after a while that they were gone and then like resolidifying finding themselves and then the trials and tribulations of the Dark Order, I thought that this was a pretty strong match here. And if it wasn't for the exception of how much fun the main event was, this probably was at least my match of the night. Like it was a, like I feel like that this was a better effort, and it does feel kind of weird. Like, was I the only one that kind of felt like, oh, we're going back to that thing that ended one of the worst episodes of AEW TV tonight on what was one of the like the most unenjoyable episodes of AEW Dynamite in recent memory? Was I the only one who kind of noticed that?
That angle was good, actually.
It was funny to me that commentary and Tony, you know, acted like the creepers had never come out and surrounded the ring before, and I was like, oh, this is a shocking development. I mean, this, I would say the highlight of this for me was Colt Cabana on commentary, because he, again, you know, he's a an experienced performer and like able to act in a way that your people like FTR aren't able to. And he really threaded a difficult needle here of like, he has to remain babyface, but seem like he's being enchanted by the throes of this clearly evil Colt. And so he has to sort of keep that distance between himself and the Colt, but also, you know, that he's friends with them and enjoys hanging out with them. And he just played it very well and also had just interesting things to say. In terms of the match, if this match had been on last week's show with the super hot first hour and everything, it would have been like, oh yeah, just another really strong match. But because it was on this show, you know, it just did nothing for me. The Dark Order were obviously just no threat whatsoever. They've been totally minimized, this particular pair of Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. BTE has largely been anchored by segments where Mr. Brody Lee makes Evil Uno look like a jackass and just clearly established that he's underneath him and that he's, you know, basically no better than John Silver. And that I just carried that through to this match. And I was like, obviously, there's no chance the Dark Order are winning here. This is basically nothing. They're going to do their Kenny Omega, Adam Page work rate tag match here, and they're going to win, and we're going to move on to the next thing. So yeah, Colt was the highlight for me.
And it does kind of seem like that the natural endpoint's going to be Brody and I guess Colt versus the Omega and Paige. At least I get the feeling of like for at least this side of this angle, which that's just thing that they've done pretty well. This is a pretty interwoven angle because you have FTR being involved, you have the Bucks being involved now, and then you could say like the fringe teams are involved as well. But it does seem like because I did have the moment on light, like wondering like is this going to be the time, because it does feel like that Hangman and Paige's tag team champions have gone on as long as you could expect them to. But it does seem like that the natural endpoint might be Brody Lee and Colt Cabana. I mean, that would definitely seem to be like the bigger match on offer than Evil Uno and Sue Grayson at this point, which is kind of wild to say, you know, like Colt Cabana and Sue Grayson are more important to the Dark Order than the people who are like the original members of the Dark Order. But that's the world we live in now.
Yeah, I think that's the all out match, the all out tag team championship match. Next up, we got Britt Baker. She's got something to say about Big Swole. She knows Big Swole is in the women's tag team tournament, which we haven't talked about yet, but they haven't told us the rules yet. So we'll tell you about that in a minute. She says she knows the Big Swole suspension is not going to last forever. She's not dumb. She's a dentist, but she also knows Big Swole more than anything wants to get her hands on Britt because Big Swole is obsessed with her. So she's a role model. She's going to give Swole a shot at her if she beats an opponent of Britt's choosing. Don't forget, this is still Britt's division. Thought this was in line with the rest of the show. Not as good as Britt's usual work. So kind of a bummer. The Diamante video that we already talked about. She said she's been busting her ass on the indies for 10 years. She's an unsigned talent. Getting a win over the champion would really put her on the map. And the rest of the women would be forced to fear her. She's got nothing to lose. Everything to prove. And then she says in Spanish, the pressure makes diamonds. I will say it in English because I do not speak Spanish. Then Hikaru Shida defeated Diamante with the Falconero. It was a fine match. It was okay.
It was the video was so good that it kind of like was like, man, I wish this match was a little better to capitalize on this video and really solidify Diamante, but this wasn't it for me.
The deadly draw was announced yet. Announced what? Next? That's the word I was looking for, I think.
Well, the first draw, right?
No, that came up after this.
My bad. Disregard.
Delete. So the deadly draw is going to be the draw.
It's all at the same time. One led directly into the other. It's the same segment.
That's true. This is going to be for the women's tag team tournament that we've been told about. It's going to be a random draw. All competitors must draw a color, and the matching colors will become a team. Most importantly, though, folks, you got to read all the fine print. Selections are final and cannot be appealed. Do not file an appeal.
No yeah. Due process for no the deadly draw pick.
Well, I'm not sure what circuit Georgia is in, but do not file an appeal to the United States Circuit Court of Appeals. It will be denied.
Is there a preferred arbitrator, and that preferred arbitrator is Mega Perect in this?
Mega should maybe have a role, but no, it cannot be appealed. Don't try it. I just thought that was really funny.
Oh no, that owns. Like that is
also like, what is up with them? And you had the battle royal with the suits. You drew a suit, a card, and you ended up in a thing. Now you draw royal. A color. Yeah, but it was like what? Very weird the way that they
I kind of like it. For you know, it's just a little bit more color for the way that they're presenting it.
Well, I mean, this is a gambling promotion. Like they like gamble to make this big promotion. Like whenever someone's all in, they're all elite, all in. Like they really like having the gambling metaphors. I'm really hoping that we get like an old timey gambler character that's a jobber down the line. I think that'd be a good role for Griff Garrison if he's like an old timey gambler.
The gambler, maybe Griff Garrison.
Yeah.
If they make the teams get matching gear in the color that they select, maybe that's
of course, Nate, Mr. Aesthetics would come up with that idea. All right, then we saw Vicky Guerrero and Nyla Rose backstage with Dasha. And Vicky says she doesn't care who their partner is because they're going to win. Nyla picks purple. Dasha informs her someone else has already picked purple. And boy, oh boy, next up on the screen, it's fucking Cameron. Ariane Andrew is all elite.
Yeah, totally mind-blowing appearance here. much more exciting than Zack Ryder for me personally. It is, you know, I've talked about this a lot, diminishing returns. You do one debut on the show and the next debut on the show maybe means a little less. So I can't imagine a world where, you know, having Ariane Andrew debut here makes you think of, you know, TNA. It's like, hey, we got Heath Slater and Brian Myers, right? That's like the worst version of this. But personally, this is such an off the board, totally wild choice that I cannot help but be excited about it. You know, we haven't been able to have any TJPW talent here on these shows because nobody can travel. So it's good that we're going to have that just sort of like chaotic energy of Cameron, where it's like she's maybe not that good, but God damn it, she's going to go out there and try her hardest, and she's going to go, you know, full swing into it. And, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that she might be like kind of good. And she's got the GCW indie credibility now because she was going to be on Effie's Big Gay Brunch and she was training for that. So like, my interest in the tournament was already pretty high, but going this far off the board is like, oh, this is going to be some shit to watch here.
At the very least, like, y'all know how I feel. At the very least, this will be interesting, and I will take I'll take interesting any day of the week. And if Ariana Andrews coming in, who else might be coming in? And this could be like a wild ride that could happen. And maybe we could, because there is somewhat that relationship with DDT, maybe we could like form like a Pink Ready USA, maybe a Daydream. We need to get some teams there. Maybe we could have the Neo Bishiki gun pop up in this thing. We could really like still have the Tokyo Joshi Pro flavor in this tournament, even if we did not have people appearing in it.
I'm very sad that you guys are both into this because I wanted to be the one who's into it.
I announced to the DM very early today that I was talking myself into a big time.
I legitimately gasped when she was on screen. I could not fucking believe it. And to me, it's like,
and not only should she show up, dropped her iconic catchphrase.
Yes, girl, bye. Oh, she's so good. Well, she dropped a girl high here, I guess, but so good.
It owns.
I just think like, I don't think they've signed her. It doesn't appear they've signed her. They're going to be bringing in some people for this tag team tournament. You might as well try some people out. I think that's fun. I can't imagine being upset about this other than Nate's valid criticism that it's like TNA-ish the way that they kind of did the debuts on this show.
Right. And, you know, she's going to be the lost pole for Nyla, which is perfect. Like, now you have an excuse for beating Nyla's team because she's, you know, got Cameron as her second. That's like, yeah, no room to be mad about this. The only way to be mad about this is mad that they lessened the impact of Cameron's debut by doing it on the same show as Matt Cardona.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real point of contention right here.
Somebody posted in the Discord last night when Cameron came out, the 50 Cent tweet that's like, everybody get off my timeline. The next 10 minutes is just entertainment for gay men and bitches. I thought that was funny, so thought I'd share it with everybody. Frankie Thomas, I just saw him pop up in the Discord. Big fan. Next was the MJF State of AEW address. I am not going to recap all of this. I just refuse to. It was long. There was a lot to it. Yeah.
We already talked about it a lot.
Yeah, so I'm not going to do it. He challenged Jon Moxley for All Out. That's what you need to know.
There's one thing we need to note. Lee Johnson is officially affiliated with Wardlow and MJF.
That's right.
The only thing you need to know.
Big shoddy Lee Johnson was there in the background, and then got a socials promo where he talked about why he was supporting MJF's candidacy. So good for big shoddy Lee Johnson. Also, I don't know if we talk about that on this show that much, but a lot of QT students back on this show. They've been gone. QT had been potentially exposed to COVID, and so a lot of his people had not been on Dark, and then they're back, even though I guess QT's focusing on that Nightmare Factory camp that got announced today. So I don't know if we'll see him soon. We also, speaking of the Deadly Draw, we also learned that the Nightmare Sisters will not be permitted to just enter the tag team tournament together. They're going to both have to draw.
Right. Even though they definitely had on socials that the Nightmare Sisters would be in the deadly draw. You know, just sloppy. Also, Brandy was like upset that they're not going to be together now, I think.
Yeah.
Which that's not clear. I thought she was, this was like against her will and she was a reluctant partner, but now she's like not happy about it.
Well, they have a special theme now. So she's all in now. She's going in and coming out.
I'm going in. I can't wait to hear Mikey Ruggus' theme for Ariana Andrew.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no. She's just going to get Nihilist music, isn't she?
You should get like one of her
songs. She needs her own theme.
Her album.
Yeah.
She's so cool. I'm excited that she's here. I like it's so on the live chat. I usually just like have my mic running, and so you can just hear whatever. But I had muted my mic so that I could write down whatever they said in the promo. So it was just to no one. I was just could not believe that it was. I just, if you had told me of all the people in the world to guess who was going to show up on this,
not on the radar whatsoever. Just so, totally.
That's what I'm here for.
Huge get.
Then, Darby's music played, but he didn't come out. Mox came out. This is where we get the promos with Taz asking where Mox's little buddy is. What did he get beaten up by Ricky Starks? Now he's not showing up. Then he does a promo where he just talks about each of Brian Cage's muscles. Luckily, did not tell us about his yummy little penis. We didn't have to hear about that from Taz. Although the idea of Taz saying yummy little penis is now going to bounce around my head for a week or two. So that was funny.
Yummy? Was yummy what she said? I thought it was beautiful. Was it?
No,
both?
It was yummy.
It was yummy. Yeah.
I didn't study the tweet, but okay.
It's a good tweet. Ricky Starks then said Taz recruited him because he knew that Ricky has something different than Mox or Darby. When Taz tells him to go get someone, he does. Everybody thinks Darby is mysterious, but he just looks like Pigpen and wrestles like a crash test dummy. And when you try hard, you die hard. That's why he's digging two graves tonight. And
he doesn't look like Pigpen. If I had to pick a Peanuts character, he looks most like Schroeder. Right? He doesn't look like Pigpen, does he?
I don't fucking know what he's Schroeder not, he's looks not, like.
Schroeder was the piano player, but he has the similar hair. Pigpen has a dust cloud around him all the time.
I think he just meant like he's dirty.
Yeah. I just, you know, be more accurate in your slams.
Yeah, that's fair. Around this time, they walked out. Darby does the coffin drop from the rafters. Everybody, whoever said that Darby was the Sting, of the Sting NWO feud, somebody said that. This is just more ammunition for that argument because he is coming down from the rafters. And then that led right into the match. Brian Cage and Ricky Starks lost. Got this wrong in my notes. To Jon Moxley, Darby Allin. Darby pinned Starks with a skateboard full of thumbtacks to the back. I honestly, like, I saw him show us the bottom of the skateboard. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, it's shiny under there. That's interesting. And then he did the move. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. And then Ricky Starks went like crazy. And I was like, what's happening? And then they showed Ricky Starks back and I put it all together. But before that moment, I did not
understand.
Did you have
commentary muted?
I always have it kind of low because I'm, you know, on the live chat. So yeah, they said that openly that it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It was gross. Like, that's one way of, like, at least my understanding, if you take a tack spot, you're able to, like, surface area things. But when it's driven into your back, that's just, and you're not going to always have, like, thumbtacks hit you if you pour them out. Like, each of those were, like, into his back. Like, that looked like that sucked. Like, straight up sucked.
Yeah, you pull thumbtacks out, some of them are going to go, like, the wrong way, right? So none of them are going in your back, some of those, but yeah, it looked bad. It didn't look fun. And when the picture I saw where it was like they had scraped across his back too, like, that didn't look very fun. So that was the show. If you enjoy our show and you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/everythingelite. We got three tiers. You can check out everything you can get on the Patreon there. We always provide on Wednesdays a show called AEW Light, which is a preview of AEW Dark, I'm sorry, of AEW Dynamite, a review of AEW Dark. And then Nate gives us all the vlogs, every vlog that is posted on YouTube. Nate watches it for that week and then recaps it on the show.
And if it's not mentioned, then it's not worthless watching. So Nate is right. the the great blog distiller.
That's all true. We also do other bonus audio content. Like, for example, this last week on Monday, Mike did a show on our ongoing series, Into the Codyverse, where he talked about a bunch of American indie wrestling.
Yeah, it was a kind of the big return of the indies somehow under the radar. Last weekend, there was a big show in Bentley territory. I was real disappointed not to see the Bentleys at a American Legion Hall basement watching a UWFI / Shoot Fights. But it was a bunch of big shows. And Joey Janela was on the GCW shows and won the DDT Iron Man Heavy Metal Weight Championship on this. And other people of note like popped up there. A longtime favorite of the EE universe, Chris Dickinson, was the MVP of this weekend. And there's a lot of wrestling stuff kind of coming up and wrestling stuff that happens. So it was a good time to dip into the Codyverse.
Yeah. So you can get bonus audio content like that on our Patreon. And you can join our Discord, of course, and come in and chat with us all the time. And then big announcement here in August. You want to sign up for August because I will also be bringing you, I'm not sure if daily is the right word, but whenever it happens, the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix, which is their big singles tournament that's starting on August 8th and 9th. I'll be doing, every day they have a show, I'll be doing audio content reviewing the show from that day as soon as they, you know, get the matches up, which sometimes takes a little bit. But as soon as they do, I'll be doing that. So you can get a lot of that. My co-host on the Joshi podcast I do, Jumping Bomb Audio, is going to join me for some of those. So I'm not sure exactly if he'll be on there for all of them, but Taylor's going to join me for some of those. So that'll be fun. So subscribe now and get a full month, plus get everything that we've done in the past.
Well, yeah, subscribe now. It may be the 31st of July, in which case you're going to get charged again on August 1st.
That's right. I'm kind of assuming you might not listen to this till Saturday. You know,
so. Right. Well, so you know, we recorded on Thursday, so if we're sitting on Friday, then it's still July 31st, in which case you're going to get charged twice.
Yeah, wait till tomorrow.
Saturday, which is in 2 days, unless you're listening to this on Saturday, in which case it's today.
Right.
Then that'll be August 1st, and you'll get the full month there.
If it is August 1st or later when you're listening to this, sign up right now.
However, if you are someone who's listening to this way in the future and you're doing a big catch-up, check to see whenever like the halfway point of the month is and make your own broad determination on if it's the value.
You know,
right. This is August 1st, 2020. So if you're listening in 2021 or later, then none of this is relevant because the 5-Star Grand Prix happened years ago.
You know, I like telling people that you will get charged when you sign up and then again on the first of the month. But honestly, there's so much content that it's worth it and you should do it anyway. I mean, I'm really probably shouldn't sign up on the last day of the month and then
the next day. Like
but if it's, you know, the 18th, like, yeah, you're still going to get plenty of content. So join us.
We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary and we already have over 100 shows up there from anything from having guests on like Murder Brian talking about wrestling small business tyrants to the Aarons to Breaking Stronghearts to just basically everything we've been and also all the, instant reactions for the pay-per-views will not probably be a case in August, but looking to September, we will most likely have a live a reaction to All In 2020.
All Out.
Yeah. I always get that messed up. I always do.
Yeah. So join us patreon.com/everythingelite. If you hit the $5 tier, you'll get everything we do in audio form. All right, next week on Dynamite, the 12-man tag, we've talked about the Jericho versus Cassidy debate. They just kind of ad hoc announced at the end of the show, Jon Moxley will defend his title against Darby Allin next week. The mega powers collide or explode. And then Cody and Matt Cardona will take on the Beaver Boys. And because it was so good this week, we're getting another MJF promo next week, baby! Okay. Deadly Draw, I should have just said this earlier. That starts on Monday on YouTube. So there's going to be, I guess we'll get to watch all of the drawing for the teams on Monday. I would guess, if that's funny enough, we'll jump on and do a little Patreon content, but only if it's funny. If it's just boring, we won't.
It's going to be hard to top the reemergence of Cameron.
Yeah, I mean, if that's they got Cameron, who won't they get for this? Like,
that's true. I should say
high watermark right now.
No, here's a promise. If Eva Marie shows up, then we're doing a show.
Well, okay. Yeah, no,
that's fair.
I mean, I'll write everything. Will show up and like,
yes,
but then we have like
put on
best...
my fucking Eva Marie t-shirt to do the show.
the best of Total Divas circa 2014.
And if there's no Eva Marie, then probably Mike and I'll just talk about the Deadly Draw on light. That's probably the best thing to do. I talked about the wrestling camp starting September 21st. I guess if you're a pro wrestler of any experience level, go check it out because they're taking anybody of any level. So try it out, I guess, and learn from Cody and QT, I suppose.
And other people maybe teaching things about WrestleNomics.
That's right. I'm just reading tea leaves here, but we could have a friend of the show, Chris Mukigana Harrington, teaching some very important economic lessons.
I'm really interested to know who owns the WrestleNomics IP.
I don't know. I mean... I'm excited to see the Tony Khan versus Joe Lanza IP fight over WrestleNomics.
Oh, well, TK is not involved in this camp, I don't think. But I was interested between Mookie Ghana and BHT.
Yeah, but did they, you know, mistakenly sign something over to Voices of Wrestling?
Did we do that?
No, we own everything Elite.
Okay.
I mean, Everything Elite is a branch of Your Old Pal Productions, a subsidiary of Spears Innovations. So we're okay.
We own the name. So, you know, when this really blows up, we'll reap all the benefits. Okay. Last thing. If you didn't notice it, Excalibur was not on this show. There was no announcement about it. So as far as I know, so I think we're just kind of speculating here. But of course, earlier in the week, some footage from PWG, I think in 2005, dropped. I'd seen it before, so I assume other people had seen it before. Basically, there was an angle that included some promos at the ring and then a backstage promo where Excalibur used the N-word once on both occasions. Not what you want, absolutely. And we kind of assume that that's why he was taken off TV for this week. My understanding, and I haven't gone back to look for this, my understanding is that Excalibur has acknowledged and, talked about his remorse over doing this angle multiple times. And I expect we will be getting another one of those here pretty soon from Excalibur.
Yeah, inexcusable that they did it in the first place. We're not talking about, I mean, it was always inexcusable, but this wasn't 100 years ago. This was 15 years ago or whatever. So just as awful then as it was now. But, you know, they set a precedent in this promotion that people, you know, would be punished for old comments resurfacing. That's what I meant to say. So at least there's some consistency on that, you know, Sammy was held to account for what he said a couple of years ago. And it appears that maybe Excalibur was as well. So there's some consistency on that point. And yeah, I believe there was. I think they had maybe an apology that was even included on a PWG show, if I'm not mistaken. So,
I think that was on a somewhat more recent PWG show, to my knowledge, too. I think.
I don't know.
But yeah, no. I don't know. I would have. I don't want to make assumptions about previous knowledge within AEW of this, other than Excalibur has addressed this in the past, and as y'all said, I expect that he will address it again and probably show the same amount of contrition that he has for it. It was fucked up then and it's fucked up now.
Yeah. The only thing I want to push back on quickly is when people give the, like, it was a different time thing. It's like, okay, lots of people knew in 2005 that that was unacceptable.
Everybody knew in 2005 that was unacceptable. That was maybe... Now, I didn't even want to begin to speculate what they thought they were going for, but yeah, obviously unacceptable.
And also it's gross. One more thing I want to say that's gross is there was a black person who was involved in this angle, Human Tornado. And I don't know all the intricacies of how this went down, but a lot of times people will start saying, well, since a black person was involved, they probably said they were okay with it or whatever, which is like just not how power works at all. So like it's not acceptable. Even if Human Tornado came out and said he was okay with it, it remains unacceptable.
He actually did. He came out and said that he was still cool with Excalibur and all that. But, you know, obviously Human Tornado does not have the license to speak for every black person. And
right.
him, you know, authorizing it after the fact or before the fact or whatever has no bearing on its larger effect on other people or, you know, larger societal implications. So,
yeah. And I'm not saying we should toss Excalibur into the bin for this whatsoever. I think people say dumb things and things that are unacceptable to everyone. And it's up to everybody. It's mostly up to black people if they, you know, how they feel about Excalibur based on this, but it's up to everybody to decide whether you think he's genuine in apologizing and not just apologizing, but learning from what he did and growing from there. And if you do, then you should accept him back. And if not, then you should be pissed at him. You know, it's up to you. But my personal opinion, and it doesn't matter because I'm a white guy, is Excalibur seems to be remorseful. And if the black people in that company think it's okay for him to be around, then it's hard for me to say otherwise. Okay. Well, I think that's the show for this week. We're not going to talk about Jason Bateman on this episode. So if you have any thoughts about Jason Bateman, you can contact us at Everything AEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review. And please, if you want to support us, go check out patreon.com/everythingelite. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.